Well, good morning to everyone. I hope your feast is going well. I certainly did appreciate the special music. It is also always a special treat at the feast when we have so much wonderful music, and again, that was no exception. So thank you very much to the choir and all the hours and work that goes into that beautiful stage and all the work that has gone into it. It is very nice. It was interesting when Mr. Weber was talking about the stuffed animals. Brought back memories of years gone by at the feast with all the stuffed animals at the front of the stage and all the pushing and shoving we do as parents to get to the front. No, not really. It was actually more my wife than me, actually. But no, you can't recreate those memories. It's beautiful. But it is fun to see the young ones clamor for those, and it's fun to see that tradition is still being carried on. Well, I have a little story, or I guess a joke for you before we start. I'm reminded before I speak of a priest and a taxi cab driver, and if you would suspend our theology just for a moment, they had died and they had gone to heaven, and they were met by St. Peter. And St. Peter said, "Come with me." So he got them both to come into a small bus, and he drove for a little bit, and he came to the first house, and it was a sprawling house with wonderful landscaping and a big yard, and he dropped off the taxi cab driver. And he drove a little further down the road, and he came to a real small, almost a shack with a couple small bunk beds in it, and he dropped the priest off there. And the priest said, "I don't understand, priest/minister, let's go there. I don't understand," he said, "I did all this service in your name, I did all these things, and I get this small place. I don't understand why, what happened?" And St. Peter said, "Well, while you were preaching, people were sleeping. When he was driving, people were praying." So sometimes we don't exactly know how our service is going to really work out in the end, but I hope you'll do more praying than sleeping during the message. Bob Ross, some of you may know him, was a famous American painter and author. Well known for his landscape scenes, probably best known for his show called The Joy of Painting. When our children were much younger, sometimes they would watch one of Bob Ross's shows. And it's pretty fascinating as you watched him work his craft, because he would start the paint and he would start doing a lake scene and some trees and some wonderful things would start to develop. And at that point, I'd probably walk into the room and see what the kids were watching. And then he'd dip down and he'd take his paintbrush and he'd put a lot of black on one side. And I said, "Well, you ruined the picture. You ruined the painting. You ruined the painting. It's too much black." And I think about our lives sometimes, and I think about a moment in my life when too much black paint went on the canvas. I remember the day. How could I forget the day? It was July 27th, 1983. The day when I felt too much black paint went on my life's canvas. So whenever July comes around, it's a hard month for me, especially when it's July 27th. In this past year, surprisingly, almost unbelievably so, it's been 35 years. 35 years since my sister, who was 1 year older than me, died unexpectedly in a car accident. She was the good one. She was the one who had so much potential. She was the one who had just graduated from nursing at Vanderbilt University and had so much life. Dark paint came on the canvas. And I thought about it this past July. It was 35 years. And we were having a memorial service for my father, who had passed away as well, and we were at the cemetery. 35 years to the day, the cemetery was not lost on me. As I saw her headstone again, that said 1961 to 1983, 22 short years. My dad, on the other hand, would have 97 years. But in those 97 years, as we sat there at the cemetery, and his remains were just in front of me in a small marble box, I thought about his strength as a young boy, as a young man, that seemed endless. And then I remembered his pain in the final years, and I remember the years, too many that I care to recall, where we were separated, all in the name of religion. And I sat there this past summer and those thoughts came back to me again. Why? Why does it work this way? What was the reason that my sister died so young? And I was reminded, as I sat in the sunlight, of a verse I want to share with you today. A verse that I hopefully will help us at this feast as we take time out. We take time out from this life, and we've heard so much already in the messages. Hopefully this will add a little bit to that meaning. And it's found back in the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is the book that's commonly read this time of year in the Jewish community because there's so much that's so valuable about life and God and eternity and the lessons that we're supposed to learn. Because I said that happened 35 years ago, but every now and then the question still comes up, why? As I saw when I watched Bob Ross paint, you don't need black paint over there. You were doing just great with the green and the yellow. That's how I felt that day 35 years ago. Our family was doing great with green and yellow. Why do we need black on the painting? That's how we feel humanly. But I was reminded again as I sat there of Ecclesiastes 3. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 11. Turn with me if you would. And you're going to find that everything we want to talk about this morning is in this one verse. It's in this one verse. And it's Solomon relaying something that gives us hope, that gives us encouragement, that gives us something during this time of the year when we take a big time out and we talk about and we reflect on life now and life in the future. Look at Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 11. He says, He, God, has made everything beautiful in its time. That word beautiful means appropriate or fitting. God has made everything beautiful in its time. That's a big concept to wrap your eyes and your mind around when you're feeling some of the things we feel in this temporary life. Look at the first 8 verses of Ecclesiastes 3. We know this well, made famous by the birds. There's a time for every season. Time, turn, turn, turn. All these different seasons of our lives that are talked about here. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to break down, a time to build up. Verse 6 has special meaning for me and my wife. A time to keep. My wife likes to keep things. I think there's a time to throw away pretty much all the time. So over the years, when the mail comes into the house, you can imagine, did we get any mail today? I'm not sure how to answer that right away, because if I threw something out, then there's a time, it says in verse 8, a time for war, and then eventually, hopefully, a time for peace, right? It could be worse. There's a time to kill, but we haven't gone there yet. So these seasons, these times, it's part of who we are and how we live. And we think about God when we say God has made everything perfect in his time. God is the one who does seasons and times. From the very beginning, what did God do? He separated the day from the night. He made a weekly cycle. How much we enjoy and relish the weekly Sabbath. He gave us his annual holy day plan. Right? God is a God of times and seasons who sets up things beyond our comprehension. You don't have to turn there, but in Daniel 2 and verse 1, it says, He's the one that removes kings and he sets up kings. He says, I change the seasons and the times. That's who God is. God is the one who is all about times and seasons and understanding, and God has the paintbrush in his hand, although sometimes we say, God, use a different paintbrush, please. Remember a few years ago, my wife made the comment, it's so hard not to bring your wife into the sermon, but yet it's so much fun, that's why we do it. But years ago, she said, I was probably going through a particularly difficult time, she says, you know what, God has a unique plan for each one of us, and that's where you're supposed to be right now. That's why it's good. And I said, my first thought was, well, next time you speak with God, could you ask him if he could maybe change it and put me over here for a while now too? Right? That's my first thought. But she says, no, for each one of us, where we are, because you hear sometimes the expression we use, that's just where I am. Right? That's the season of your life. You might be right now where it's a time to mourn. Pick one of those seasons in the first eight verses. That's where we're planted right now. And it says a time that denotes a period of maybe days, weeks, months. But God is the one who sets seasons and times. God is the one who knows how that canvas should look. When he uses whatever paint color he puts on the canvases of our lives. And we're here during this feast again to reconfirm that we are going to trust in his timing, his perfect timing. Now, I only get to share my story with you because I have the microphone this morning, but I know if we went around the room, you would all have a story like the one I related about my sister. I've talked to several people just in the short period of time we've been here at the feast, and I've heard of difficulties, trouble, scars of life. That each one of you, I'm sure to one extent or another, said, if you had the paintbrush, we may have painted it differently than how it's been painted so far. I think of all the things over the years, you look at our church history, right? That's what's fun when you talk with people who have been here a little further, and I will say, you've seen a lot of road. We've seen a lot of pathways, a lot of journey, a lot of trusting, a lot of waiting on God's timing. Would we have painted some of the things that happened? I wouldn't have painted it this way. Some of the difficulties, some of the friendships that have gone by the wayside. But the good thing is I don't have the paintbrush. The one who is eternal, the one who knows, the one who has the whole canvas, he has the paintbrush. And we can take time out and take comfort in that. Take comfort in that. I also think, yes, I really appreciate it. Mr. Weber had the young people, 18 and under, stand up for their commitment. The only thing I would add to that, I have several in our group that are in their 19, 20, 21, going to college too, and it's a difficult time to step aside and make time for God right now. You know, in many ways, I think it would be easier if the feast fell in July. Right? God didn't set it up that way. It falls now, and God says, here we are, and we come and we commit to you and your timing. All of us, as we heard in Mr. Snyder's message, probably had difficulties coming, and it's different. I think of young people with your lives wondering how they will work out. Where's that person in your life and how will it work out? God's still painting. God's still painting. We're here to trust in his timing. He says, Ecclesiastes, Solomon says, he makes all things beautiful in its time. I hope you find great comfort in that, because I know as we go through this life, as we go through this journey, there's times when it feels difficult and it feels like maybe God doesn't understand fully or God doesn't see it, but he does. He does. And I find great encouragement when I come to a feast site and we see people we've known or meet new people who have continued to walk one foot forward. Keep moving forward on God's timing. How many years have we prayed? How many sermons have I heard? I've had the privilege of being raised pretty much in the church, came in the church when my dad started when I was 8 years old. How many sermons have I heard about? We pray, we hope, we look forward to the return of Jesus Christ. Is that not our prayer? Is that not why we are here? Maybe we would have thought there were several times when God should have come. Why does he delay his coming? I remember as a young boy, I was 16 years old. I can remember it vividly. When was that? No, I remember it vividly. It was a Sunday morning. We had a church softball team. It was back in 19. You guys can do quick math on my age. That's fine. It was 1978. I was 16 years old. And we were playing softball. And that was when I think Pope John that was had just been named the Pope. And a couple older guys on the team were saying about trying to do the math on the number, and his name must have been the special name. It was the 666 name, and this meant the return of Christ was imminent. I hear some laughters and chuckles, right? We did the math. We tried to figure all that out. There were times when it made sense. There were times in 1972, 1975. It made sense. People lived their lives a certain way, but it didn't happen that way. And Jesus said, I don't even know. Only the Father knows. Over the time, you start to say, you know what? That's good enough for me too now. That's good enough because Jesus Christ will come when God the Father says, it is time. And he says, behold, I will come, and I come quickly. We read that in Revelation 22. That promise is there. It's steadfast. It just may not be on my timing. It just may not be with the paintbrush that I would use. But God knows. God knows. Look at Romans. Romans 8, verse 28. For some of you, I know this is a favorite verse. One of the things we have back home in our regional area back in Columbus, Ohio, they have a teen prom every year, and it's really neat because pretty good turnout. They have maybe, I don't know, 80 teens, but maybe 15 or 20 are seniors, and they always ask them for a favorite verse, and they all get to pick one. That's difficult, right, when you try to pick one verse out of the Bible. I've heard several young people use this verse. Some of you might hang on to this verse, and we should. Romans 8, verse 28. And we know that all things work together for good. He has made all things beautiful in its time. All things work together for good. When? We don't know. But he does. He does for those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. He makes all things good. He makes all things beautiful. Something we can hang on this time of year when we come and we commit again and we say, God, I'm here. The timing may not be the best. The difficulties in my life might be overwhelming. But I'm putting my trust in you, in your timing, and that you have my life in your hands. Turn back to Ecclesiastes, the third chapter. Because Solomon gives us three nuggets that are good for us to look at during this feast as we take a big time out from our day to day. Ecclesiastes 3, verse 11. We just read, he has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts. God has put this incredible sense of eternity in our hearts. I just talked to you. It's a real dichotomy or a paradox or a dilemma that we live in this such a temporary world. That's all we know. We go back and forth with these seasons of life and time, but yet there's a yearning. But yet there's something more. We hear a song. We hear like what the choir sang, and you sense there's something more. You read a verse. You have unspeakable joy. You brush against death. Something inside of us hints that there's more to life than this temporary existence. I enjoyed this little cartoon. I saw this years ago, but it was funny. This one wasn't, but the second one was. They had these two people laying on their back on a blanket at nighttime looking up at the stars, and it said, underneath it says, kind of makes you feel insignificant. doesn't it? Right? You lay there and you're like, yeah, when you, like, we were last night down by the ocean again. I always have that overwhelming feeling when you're by the ocean. I try to tell the kids, how much could I pay you to go in that water at night and just go out there, right? You couldn't pay me enough. It's this huge expanse that makes you feel pretty, pretty small. You feel, I mean, even if someone did not have a religious base, it would be difficult to come away without feeling there's something tugging, something greater than this human existence. Well, then a couple of years later, someone took that same cartoon that I enjoyed, and they had two people lying face down in the grass. And it said, kind of makes you feel significant, doesn't it? All right, we'll work on that one. All right, but you get the point. When you're there and you're on your, okay, let's go to the first one. When you're on your back and you're laying there, there's something bigger and larger than us. There's something that God has put into our hearts that's larger than us. We are here at the feast to remove the rubble of our lives and unearth eternity. How many messages have talked about this, the frantic nature of our lives, the come and to rush here and do the things and all the physical things we need to do to sustain us. In the meantime, that whisper of eternity, that tugging of something more beyond us is lost. We're here to this week to take all the rubble of life, to dig deep and find the eternity that he says has been put into our hearts by God. What an unbelievable blessing that is at the feast. I really enjoyed the feast video yesterday because sometimes it's good to dream a little. It's good to step back and put ourselves in this spot of eternity. I enjoyed the feast video very much yesterday with that one question. I forget the exact phrasing of the question, but it was like, what do you look forward to when Satan is no longer around? Right? How often do we even play with that thought? Because we live in a world we can't even picture that. Satan's influence is, we just deal with it, right? But I love the expressions in the one gentleman there that said, I can't even put into words. Right? I can't even put into words how awesome it will be, but it will be awesome. Right? We're here this week to unearth eternity. You know how many times I tell the kids and we talk to them and I might say, you know what, in a perfect world, right? How many times you use that expression, in a perfect world, because we can't even, you know, we're not there, but if you could, what does it even look like? Well, guess what? It looks like the things we're talking about this week. We heard it in the message yesterday, the kingdom of God being within us, around us, amongst us. God and who he is, his love, his mercy, his kindness, the eternal principles that don't fade away. Those are the things that we are coming this week to experience. We are coming this week to understand more of. Had a great experience several years ago. Shows you how things stay with you. I think it was 2011. We had the opportunity to be in England for the feast. And I met a lady at the feast, and she started right away talking to me about what animals she wanted to have as pets in the kingdom. At first, I was struck like, I got to go now, right? It was like, but the more I talked to her, I said, you know what? She's on a plane. She's in a thought process that I have just probably detached myself from. That world's not real, but to her, it was very real. She had stepped inside the boundaries of eternity. She was tapped into that eternity that God had put into her heart. It was a beautiful thing, and she spoke in great description of what her world was going to be like. I never forgot that. Very, very interesting. We are here to have those exchanges, to hear about eternity, to live in eternity now. Turn to John, 1 John 2 and verse 17. It is such a dichotomy. We come and we have that theme of we are so temporary, we are so caught up in the temporary, it is hard for us to shift gears, to move into God's world of an eternal habitation. But that's what these days are about. That's why we've had, I think, so many, for many of us, so many cracks at it, to try to understand that, to try to wrap our heads around it, because John makes a very important statement here in 1 John 2, in verse 16. For all this is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. It's all around us, as I said. But he says what? It is not of the Father, but of the world. And here's the important concept for all of us. And I always want to make sure our young people are in tune with this as well, because it's such a trap that Satan has set up. It's all so alluring. It's all so great. It's all so right there. And you could have it all, and it's always going to be good, and it's always permanent, but it's always not going to be, because verse 17 says that it's fading away. The world is passing away. What we take as permanent, what we take as eternal, is temporary. Sometimes I like it in certain movies. We'll watch a movie, and you watch the movie, and you say, how did you like that movie? That's a pretty good movie. But sometimes, you know what? You've got to suspend reality a little bit, because some of the stuff you see, it's just over the top crazy. You've got to suspend reality. And then once the movie's over, then you can come back to your reality. But we're not here really to suspend our reality. We're here to replace our reality. Right? Not say, oh, that's, yeah, okay, wow, that could never happen. A world without violence, a world with peace, a world with prosperity. Yeah, okay, we'll go and talk about that. Suspend reality, and then we get back to what I got to do next week at work, or who I've got to take care of, or what I got to do in school. No, we're here to replace our reality with the new reality that is coming, that's spoken about here. But it's hard. It's hard sometimes to make that transition, even here at the feast. I had a moment this morning with that. There was something that was very, very, very urgent, at least I thought so, for work that I was trying to get done. I knew I had a message. I tried to say, well, I think I can get enough time in here to do this. The computer was not cooperating. I couldn't work on that. And all of a sudden, it's said, wait, this is all passing away. That can wait. I have words of life here that are needed. I need to work on this. Even here at the feast, it's a tug of war, because that reality is so entrenched in us. That's why it takes time. We heard about that. It seems like every time we go somewhere, my wife will say this, if we go somewhere where it's just by day two, day three, you're starting to, oh, I have a neck, right? Stress is coming off the shoulders. You're starting to relax. Guess what? I don't have to start thinking about the house or this or that. God has it. God is in control. God said, come and rejoice. Come and be here and hear more about eternity. Let that peace go. Right? I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but it takes me time to get there. Maybe that's why the millennium is 1,000 years. Before that whole time will come and we say, we're Satan. Right? How often do we feel that in our world? How often do I look, have I locked? Have I, man, the mental gyrations we go through in this lifetime. But this is a week to embrace. Embrace eternity, the greatness of our God, what he offers, the world to come for those who are clinging to him. It says that in verse 17, those who are here and want to do his will. So many positive things result when we line up with God and say, God, I'm here. I trust your timing. I want to know more about you and eternity and cling to you. No matter what the waves, the winds, the difficulties that might be here or might be there when I get back. For those of you who like a title for a sermon, you can entitle this From Here to Eternity. Right? It's taking us from the here and now that's so real to really to eternity. That's what the feast is all about. That's why God has times and seasons. If we did this once in our lifetime, we wouldn't even, it can't happen that way. whether it's the Sabbath, what it is, God constantly has to renew, unearth, and we're party to it by what we do and how we take it in today. Turn to 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 4. Paul makes a statement to me that I still struggle with because of the depth of, I believe, his understanding of this concept of saying, I live here today in eternity, but I know where my true home is. I think it's interesting when people get to that spot in life, when they understand that they see clearly, this is not a home. This is not our permanent home. This is a temporary home. This is what Paul was talking about here. This is a graduate school concept for all of us at the feast. As we look at this and we say, verse 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 1. For we know that if our earthly house, our bodies, this tent, another feast theme right here, is destroyed. We know it's physical. We know it's going away. We know if it's destroyed, what do we have? What do we hang on to? We have a building from God, a house not made with hands. There's this word again, eternal. Eternal in the heavens. That's a great swap out, isn't it? To say we have something God has prepared that never goes away, that never is tarnished. For in verse 2, if we're in this, we groan earnestly, desiring to be clothed with our habitation, which is from heaven. When I say it's something and I'm not there yet, I think, do I groan earnestly for that eternity, for what God has prepared, for what God has, or do I have too much of a foothold still on the things that are passing away? And we come here to take a time out and say, God, I want to have more of that foothold on you and that house that you have prepared for me. Verse 3, if indeed, having been clothed, we shall not be found naked, for we who are in this tent groan, being burdened, because it does become a burden the more life goes on. I know I saw that with my father, and I laughed because he had what I thought was a humorous saying. Several times he would say, you know, life's hard. You get old, and then you can't die. It was sort of a humorous joke as he got to be 97 and couldn't do a whole lot at that point. But we have this burden, this groaning of this life. Not because we don't want to be, well, verse 4, not because we want to be unclothed, but further clothed with the right clothing. And I think what's good to take note of is the last part of verse 4, that mortality may be swallowed up in life. What we call life is not life. What we are requesting from God or looking for is true life. We are here to unearth eternity. Go back to Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 11 for the third point that I think is something for us to dwell upon as we're here for these very short 8 days that we enjoy so much. If we take time out at God's appointed feast, Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 11. He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. Or said another way, but even with eternity in our hearts, we can't understand what God is doing from beginning to end. The same way, if you were to happen upon Bob Ross mid-show, you got this wonderful lake and some evergreens and a lot of black on the left. We don't see the full picture, but we're here to see more of the picture at the feast. We're here to come away with a bigger God than when we arrived here 2-3 days ago. To walk away more in awe. How many times at the feast have we said we're here to fear God? To have more respect of who He is, His eternity, His plan. And we just step underneath that. I will say, and I always say this to the young people, that The world is creating a smaller and smaller God every day. And you are ridiculed if you were to even have any hope, any conversation, any kind of anchoring to a God. We are here to come away with a bigger God, a God that has expanded, a God where we say, I don't know, but I know God has, and God is great, and God is good. It is so encouraging when I hear so many brethren, so many of you who are walking in different spots or paths and say, I trust in God. That's why I'm here. I know God is good. I know God has it. And we come and we learn more and we expand because John wrote in John 17, verse 3, eternal life is just that, that we would know God the Father and Jesus Christ, whom he sent. That we would have an even greater understanding as we walk away, that God feels bigger to us, that God can do even more, that God, how many times it's funny, you get into these conversations sometimes, we even speak of the resurrection, right? And you start to say, how can God resurrect all these people who are buried out in sea in different spots? And it doesn't, you know, you get, people might bring those questions back to you and go, how could, I don't know. But God's done a lot of things that are pretty amazing that I don't know how he does it. So I'm thinking God can do this one too. Go back to Job 26 for a moment if you would. Or stay here for a second. I'm sorry. If you've already turned, I have to ask you to just back up for a second. Because Solomon says this same kind of statement here about trying to understand God. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 16. When I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night. He was all about gaining wisdom, understanding what's being done on this earth. What does he say in verse 17? Then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. God is supreme. God is majestic. We are here to learn more, to take in more, to expand our minds to understand more of who he is. Job 26. Job 26 and verse 7. Job is laying out some pretty amazing things about God. Verse 7, he stretches out the north over empty space. He hangs the earth on nothing. He binds up the water in his thick clouds, yet the clouds are not broken under it. He covers the face of his throne and spreads his clouds over it. He drew a circular horizon on the face of waters. At the boundary of light and darkness, the pillars of heaven tremble and are astonished at his rebuke. He stirs up the sea with his power, and by his understanding he breaks up the storm. By his spirit he adorned the heavens. His hand pierced the fleeing serpent. Verse 14. Indeed, these are the mere edges of his ways. And how small a whisper we hear of him. But the thunder of his power, who can understand? We are here to expand those edges of our understanding, to come in a little bit closer inside the circle of who God is during this time, because his work is great, his work is awesome, and God has put eternity into our hearts to hopefully see during these 8 days a little bit more of who God is and what he is doing, and to rejoice in that, to rejoice in the greatness of who he is. Well, as I said at the outset, sometimes it's easy in our lives to concentrate on those strokes of black paint that come on the canvas. They come on the canvas of our lives. I know it's been easy for me to do that at different times and ask the question, why? Why, God? And sometimes we want to take, and I think about it, and I know it's a matter of wanting control, wanting a different paintbrush. But God has brought us here to trust in his timing, to trust in his eternal majesty, his power, his wisdom, his love, his fill in the blank. In the same way, Bob Ross, when he was painting that the first time I saw it, waited a little longer and kept working on the black. He brought a few more colors, and before you know it, beautiful pine trees started to emerge. Some birds came out of the blackness. Some light came on that one side. And by the time they were rolling the credits, it was a beautiful Bob Ross production. But it's easy sometimes for us to lose the entire picture, to understand the canvas of eternity in God, and that's why we're here at the Feast of Tabernacles, to take time out and to understand God is in control. God understands each of our difficulties, the temporary things that are here, but we are here to shift gears from this temporary world that's, oh boy, seems so permanent, seems so real, seems so everything to us, and to flip that switch into an eternal perspective. And hopefully come away with a few more nuggets of the greatness of God and who he is. Because God is still painting. He's still painting. That's the good news. And when he gets done, it will be a masterpiece for the ages.